You know, I had a chance to kill Jenna Slint. I had a chance to kill Grandmeister Picel, and I didn't do it. But this guy, Simon Silvertongue, yeah, you know what? I'm going to kill him. Well, Kate, I want to start off today's show by wishing you a very happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, Kate.
Thanks, guys. I'm sure if Eric were here, which he's not.
He's not.
He would be very excited.
He would say, "Happy name day, Kate."
No, probably.
He would. That's
probably
exactly what Eric sounds like.
Sounds
welcome
sort of like
to Game of Bones, everyone listening.
Rough Santa Claus.
Rough Santa Claus will be here with us in a matter of days. It nears Christmas. We're glad that you tuned into our podcast.
Do you know, I think this might be the only two chapter combinations that have like a serious theme about bears. Like one, this is like a fake tie together. This is not an actual like promo thing I'm cutting.
Now,
here,
is this like, the are you tying the right chapters together here,
oh,
Kate?
Oh God. All right. All right, listeners.
Full disclosure.
This is what happened. 5 chapters from now, there's another Jaime Tyrion combo.
Yes.
And that's the one I read. So if I make references to things that you don't remember from these chapters, it's because I read the other Jaime Tyrion combo. Who does that? Who does that?
I had a good laugh. We were getting our recordings done for our $10 Patreon level, which some of you are on, some of you may not know about yet. And she was like, "Hey, I think I recorded the wrong ones." Oh, well. We've since corrected the issue.
I believe, yeah. I said, "Somebody please kill me."
That's what it was.
And also, fuck my life.
That too.
This could all have been resolved if George R. R. Martin would have just used numbers like everybody else.
It's true. It's true. Even like knowing, I was just like, what are the odds? It's like if you, isn't there some fact about a deck of cards that if you like lay out all 52 cards in a random order, it's like 1 in 3 trillion chance that you'll lay it out in the same order as has ever been laid out before. I don't know. It's some crazy astronomical number. But I just figured, like, it's got to be something like that when it comes to these chapters. How many Jaime Tyrion combinations are there gonna be in the middle of a given book? Well, as it turns out, 2. And I read the wrong one, everybody. Even earlier when we were recording our pre-show banter, Zach was like, "Can somebody summarize what happened in the Tyrion chapter?" And I was like, "Sure." And I gave him a summary
like
of the
long.
Wrong. Yeah, yeah. No, I went on for a while of the wrong Tyrion chapter. I just can't get away from it.
But it was a nice teaser for us, at least, to know that we'll be introduced to
the Red
a certain character.
Well, yes. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. I can't say that.
Yeah, you can. You okay. Just did.
Yeah, well.
He's in the show.
Tell your father I'm here.
You've seen it before.
The great thing about the line that I just said, I think, was that we were doing our Google Hangout, right, with our good old friends.
The
who
small
are,
council.
The small council.
Yes, that's who so comprise fun. the small council. And you guys kind of freaked out a bit because I did it right in front of you.
You're freaked out.
you're just used to hearing the voice over the interwebs. And I actually said it just like I'm talking right now, and I guess that can kind of be freaky a little bit.
That was a lot of fun. I completely
it was so much fun.
Yeah, that was it was a blast to get to hang out with you guys that hopped in on that, and we look forward to doing that again.
Yeah,
it was also strange just for us in general just to be on video chat while we were talking, because we don't normally do that. We're not doing it right now.
No, we're not. And I have never seen your faces move with your mouths and with your voices coming out, so it was a little unnerving for me.
I think it's cool to be able to do that with people who listen to the show. It's just another way to interact, and just had a lot of fun doing it.
Absolutely. So where are we at right now? I'm thinking in the course of 2014, we're almost to a close.
I know.
Christmas is nearing, which means that most likely next week we're going to have a beautifully thematic pre-Christmas episode challenging you guys to have good times that I'm sure you're already going to have at Christmas.
I thought you were saying we were going to get a new trailer.
Hey, Zach, I heard I heard that you were the editor of a Game of Thrones related masterpiece book. Please explain.
Thank you, Kate, for that, and thank you, Micah, as well, for not coming to my rescue.
Put you on the spot.
Well, look, I tried to put you on a spot with the trailer, and then that didn't go anywhere. So Kate just figured, hell, I'm going to go with a book and see if that
this
works.
This is something I feel like you've been like nebulously mentioning to us in texts every once in a while, but like we don't know a whole lot about it.
Here, let me Google and learn some stuff about it. I'm very excited, and it's very fun to finally be able to talk about this, especially with the people listening at home, you guys. It's been a very fun process being involved with the Game of Thrones Compendium, which if you don't know what that is, you can just go to whatijustsaid.com or Google it or look for like a news article on Watchers on the Wall about it. They do a pretty good job of breaking it down, but there's also a really large photograph of my face on that page.
Yeah.
That,
all right. That you can be captured by photography.
It only happened once. So maybe don't go to that article. Maybe just go right to the website. But myself and seven other grossly over-talented people than myself and over-accomplished people than myself are lucky enough to be involved with this project by HBO and the Game of Thrones series. So
this is
it's cool. Really fun.
Sorry. So this is a book where people can submit their own works related to Game of Thrones, and you guys will assemble them into some kind of beautiful book, and then those people will all get a copy of the book.
Mm-hmm. What's really fun is it's not limited to the physical space, which is something that I'm really proud of, that it's crossing into 2015, and there's so many new ways to handle sourcing content, and just so many new ways to handle content in general. And when it is involved with something that I'm so passionate about, which is the series, obviously, I mean, we're talking about it right now on this podcast that we do together. It's so cool. More things will happen this week that I can't specifically drop here on the show.
This is cool. So submissions are going to open when this airs. It'll probably be like 12 hours from now.
It'll be on Thursday.
On Thursday, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's so much to talk about, and we've got two really great chapters to dig into tonight. So if you guys are interested, you can do a few clicks, and I'm sure that we'll be mentioning it as the weeks go on. This is something that's going to be extending deep into March of next year. It's a long project, and I am honored and grateful to be a part of it. Very, very proud. It's going to be something that I think that our podcast and the community in general can be really proud of, and I'm going to do my best to destroy it with an axe.
Yeah. we're super proud of you, but fuck that. Let's talk about Jamie.
Yeah, let's just please. This is something that I am really excited to get to, because finally we have the resolution of whatever happened when he felt this great pain in his hand. And I knew it was going to happen, but
yeah.
What a great way to start the chapter, George R. R. Martin. It just says, his hand burned.
But his hand isn't there. All through this chapter, he's feeling the phantom pain of his forcefully removed hand. And it's like the worst pain he's ever felt. He even talks about having gone through, he's like, well, I've received wounds before. It's not like he's been like living his life on a feather pillow or anything. But this is by far and away the worst pain he's ever experienced. And I can't say I've had any kind of analogous experience to this. I've never lost. I cut off the end of a finger once by accident, yeah. But I've never lost any kind of like, I've never even had any kind of significant bone breakage or anything. So
that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's nice being me.
It's pretty nice.
It's pretty nice. How about you guys?
They almost cut my leg off once.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Don't
my
do that.
My parents wouldn't let them. They were like, no. So for a while there, I was kind of disappointed. I was like, oh, it would have been kind of cool to have one of those cheetah legs. But now that it's been a few years since, I feel a lot better about the decision.
Micah, any significant injury?
No, thankfully.
Nice. You and me, living life the soft way.
Micah, one of these days, you're going to be on the court balling, all right?
And
you're
gonna, yeah, I know.
You're going to come down off of a block shot, and, you know, I don't want to put you in the wrong space.
Twist
mentally.
An ankle.
Dude, it's happened to me. I landed on someone's foot when I was trying to block their shot, tore a ligament in my ankle.
Ooh, yikes.
It's not quite this.
Yeah, it's, as you mentioned, you know, it's the resolution to a couple of chapters ago where, you know, if you're reading this book for the first time, you really don't know what has happened to Jamie, right? He just screams at the end of the last chapter. So you're very much uncertain, is he dead? I think a lot of readers of George R. R. Martin have become accustomed to flipping pages, because I know I have in certain situations. Mm-hmm. And you know, George R. R. Martin is definitely not somebody who affords readers the luxury of just killing a character or two at the end of a book, right? It can happen at any moment, mm-hmm. Unbeknownst to you. And so the way that he has written the end to the last Jamie chapter is very cryptic. And he does it for others throughout the course of the series, and it leaves you to wonder. And I'm not somebody who has that kind of patience where I can read through, you know, I don't know how many chapters it's been, but it's been a few. And then, you know, just kind of wonder if Jamie's going to show up a little bit down the line. So
yeah,
it's a maiming of sorts for Jamie. It's a sense of pride. Kate, you touched on it a little bit. And, you know, he even notes in this chapter how, you know, they took away his fighting hand, and that's the only hand he really knew how to do anything worthwhile with.
Yeah. You got to teach yourself to write with both hands, everybody. You never know.
I liked how in his internal monologue, he compares himself to Tyrion.
I like that too. Although it's taken him God knows how many decades to have any sympathy for him, I guess. He's always been like kind to Tyrion, and in some anecdotes has like defended Tyrion even as a child. So I think he's always had sympathy for Tyrion, but it's just now that he's learning what it's like to be laughed at. Mm-hmm. I imagine Jaime has participated in Tyrion's torture once or twice, like with Cersei there to like egg him on.
Yeah.
It's nice for Jaime to be able to feel some empathy for Tyrion right now.
That reminds me so much of in this chapter when he was lying down on his back and staring at the sky at night because Brienne and he have taken to, because what's happening when they're getting traveled by these brave companions, sometimes they're putting them facing toward the same direction when they're put on the same horse in the saddle, but sometimes they're pushing them together and having them sit face to face on the same saddle, and they're laughing and they're calling them the lovers, and they're like, oh, the lovers, blah blah blah. And so they've taken to sleeping during the day and lying awake at night, and he was having a particularly quiet evening when Brienne was like, hey, what are you doing? And he was like, I'm dying. And she was like, you're a craven. And that in that moment he realized, and this is one of the great things about these Jaime chapters that's so awesome in this book, he basically comes to a self-realization that, man, I've never been called a craven before. Like, I've been called a lot of really bad things. I've been called a liar, been called all these things, but like you said, he's never really been made fun of in this way. Mm-hmm. He's been spoken with distaste, like, oh, this guy's an ass, but there's always a sort of inherent fear and respect with that kind of an insult. But to call someone a craven or to laugh at someone, there is a bit of a malice that's different, and it doesn't have the same amount of respect.
He spends the first, until she kind of throws that cold water in his face, so to speak, he lives the first part of this chapter feeling pretty sorry for himself. And it's Brienne who almost certainly will be the victim of rape at the hands of these terrible people. Brienne is the one who not only has to find strength for herself, but also for Jaime. And I think that his growing, budding, begrudging respect for her goes up an enormous amount when he realizes, he's like, yeah, she's right. I gotta just like buck up, take the heat, live through this, not die of infection, not die mm-hmm. of starvation, and then fuck some dudes up after I get my new golden hand.
Yeah, she goes, live, fight, take revenge.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know,
that's her plan.
She's right.
Yeah, yeah. That's what she's, there's later when the three brave companions come to the inevitable situation where they're going to rape Brienne, which they luckily do not. We don't have to put up with that. But he has this sense of protection for her. And the only thing that he can offer her is to urge her to go away mentally from the whole situation. And she's like, no, they're not going to get any pleasure from this. Like, I refuse to give them anything that they want. So she's going to go out fighting. Like, they're not going to get her without a fight, which I really appreciate. It's a terrible thing, but I like that about her. She's just like, I refuse to vacate. This is not what I came to do. This is not how I am. I'm going to fight because I'm Brienne of Tarth, and that's what I do.
It would be three of the worst: Shagwell, Rorge, and then the fat dog Racky, who we learn is named Zolo.
Zolo, like a clown.
Like Zorro, but not really.
Also, it's Jaime who saves her from the rape when he yells that they should care whether she screams because
sapphires!
She's got sapphires, sapphires! And then Vargahode's like, whoa, nobody's going to steal my sapphires. And
that's good.
Thank you. Thanks.
It is very good.
Thank you. Nice. Thank you.
Say sapphires again. I just wanted to hear you
sapphires.
Say it.
Sapphires.
Okay.
It's like a Daffy Duck kind of thing. But anyway, so they do not rape Brienne, and Jaime saves her by shouting the word sapphires. And she's like, why did you save me? He's like, well, I owed you. You know, Lannister pays his debts. Remember that whole thing? We say that a lot. It's kind of like our unofficial house words. And she's like, oh, yeah, no, cool. But cool. Thank you. I really appreciate that. And so even in this terrible situation, they're looking out for each other and they're forming this bond. And oh, God, I always think of the scene in the show when this is far from much further along in the books. But that scene where Jaime gives Brienne Oathkeeper. Mm-hmm. And like that moment that they have, this very like special moment, they don't say anything about it. They just like exchange this look. And like, I feel like this is the chapter where they're building that relationship.
And certainly getting there.
Mm-hmm. It definitely starts here. And, Jaime, I just go back to, how he's really, I don't know that his character begins to fully change in this chapter, but I think it starts on the road, because he starts to realize certain things about himself. We talked a little bit about the internal monologue, but also how he views himself as just being this swordsman, right? He asks himself the question, was that all I was, a sword hand?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the next paragraph, something got brought up that I thought I just make note of. I don't know that we can figure out too much of it, but I just, in a second reading, just happened across this, and I wondered what Kate thought of it. It says, the wench had the right of it. He could not die. Cersei was waiting for him. She would have need of him, and Tyrion, his little brother, who loved him for a lie.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, George, you sneaky bastard.
So what's your interpretation?
I don't think I can say my interpretation. I don't think it was fully fleshed out in the show.
I see.
At the end of the season, which I think, obviously we'll get to later on in this book. But I think Kate and those who have read the books will know what I mean by that. That's my interpretation of it. I don't know what yours was.
I think just at surface level, and I'm guessing that this is incorrect, but...
Well, it could have a double meaning.
Right. Well, I think that's probably the case then, because I think it goes very well with him questioning his own self-worth and saying, was that all that I am?
Yeah, absolutely.
Being a sword hand. Because I feel like for all that Jaime Lannister has in his life, he sure is down in the dumps about losing a hand when we are in a story of people just getting killed, let alone not being fed. Just so many horrible and terrible things are happening to those around him. And he has lived a privileged life, so although he is battle-hardened, he's really not used to this level of torment and disrespect. So I understand, theoretically, what's going on, but I feel like Brienne did a really good job of kind of giving him a kick in the ribs and reminding him that life is still there, whether or not he has that hand. He's still the same person, and it's going to be an obstacle that he has to overcome. So I feel like possibly in that case, it's sort of saying a lot of the love and respect that came from Tyrion to Jaime was due to the fact that he was kind of considered this sharp, brave swordsman, talented person, which now is not true. I don't know.
It's definitely a great point, though, Zach. I think that, talking about his self-worth, maybe he feels that he was a little bit more, boastful than he should have been. I'm not sure, but I just look throughout this chapter and, I think about other captives that we've seen in this series and just sort of the differentiation in treatment. Like, as you read through this chapter, Jaime's treated like absolute shit.
Oh,
like
definitely.
He's the son of Tywin Lannister, the Hand of the King, right?
Right.
He's the uncle/dad of the King
right.
of Westeros. And he's being basically dragged through the mud and horse shit. He's drinking horse piss when, these brave companions play a trick on him.
Mm-hmm.
He's just complete. His hair is matted with dirt and shit. His nostrils are clogged up with it. He looks a freaking mess. And his hand is dangling around his neck as some kind of jape at him. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy that somebody who's this high up, and we can go back to when he was captive of the Starks, but he wasn't treated nearly this bad. I mean, he probably was in some pretty serious conditions, but I mean, the brave companions, and we see it when he gets delivered to Roose Bolton,
mm-hmm.
like, even Roose Bolton for his, you're talking about the guy who likes flaying the skin people. Off other people yeah. is appalled at the way that they've treated Jaime Lannister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I loved the introduction to meeting Roose Bolton as well, because I felt like we got a nice callback to the Mirror Reed tale of the tourney at the great castle of old Black Heron. Remember there was a mention of someone being donned with a cloak and being turned into one of the Kingsguard. That was Jaime's recollection here. That was him. Mm-hmm. And that was great that he noticed that the very spot where he knelt, where all of this gallantry was taking place, you know, King Aerys and, oh, this is the youngest Kingsguard man in history. A privy had been dug. So I just thought, good job, George. Way to show the juxtaposition of history.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's going to this place which should have held, I should say, like, some high regard for him, right? Because this is where he became a member of the Kingsguard, and yet, like, now he's coming back, however many years later, he's a captive, he's missing a hand, mm-hmm. he's been treated like shit, and he's going to be, who knows what Roose Bolton's going to do to him? I mean, there's no guarantees in this book. We should know that by now.
He's got those Stark banners up. That's an ominous sign for Jaime, which is so strange for us. You know, like, oh, Stark manners, and we're reading from Jaime's perspective. Should we be bothered?
But I think Roose makes it really clear, and some of his men too, that they're turning their allegiance pretty rapidly. And Roose is so concerned about the fact that Jaime had his hand cut off and that Brienne was almost raped. And the fact that they have the Stark banners, Brienne tries to call upon that. And one of the men's like spits. At her feet, and was like, fuck the Starks. They betrayed us.
Name-dropping the Stark banners in front of three brothers Frey at this point in Rob's arrangement with the lady situation, right. I think that was a bad idea.
Yeah, and because we know what Roose Bolton has up his sleeve that will be coming later in this book, I think it's clear that, like, he's turning his allegiance pretty rapidly to the side of the Lannisters. And so, of course, he wouldn't want Jaime to come to him maimed, because that makes him look pretty bad. I think that this puts, had they come maybe a week earlier, 2 weeks earlier, before Rob had married Jane, however much time has passed, who knows? Maybe Roose would have just flayed him and sent the skin to Tywin or something. But the winds are changing for the Boltons.
This puts us in an interesting position, because so many of you listening, all of you listening, most likely, 100%, obviously know of the events in the Red Wedding. So going back to, you know, seeing an interaction between the Roose Bolton and a high-ranking Lannister is interesting, because we can kind of see where you're exactly right, Kate. There's obviously some dissent, be it as it with Freys, and we understand that with these, especially higher-ranking Freys, that they would have some discord toward the Starks. So we get it, and it makes sense to us. But he did such a good job, and I say he, I'm talking about Uncle Ray, did such a great job of the conversationing with Roose Bolton, not quite coming out and showing where he stands on the issue.
Mm-hmm. When you're first reading this and you don't know what's going to happen, which is unfortunately not the kind of situation that you have found yourself in, because we've seen the show, but you have no idea. You have no idea. You know that Roose Bolton is a weirdo. And you can't quite pin down his loyalties, at least not yet. And so this chapter is very nerve-wracking. Jaime just lost a hand, and the guy who cut it off is really excited to bring him to Roose Bolton. So God knows what Roose Bolton's about to do to him. And Roose Bolton is super cool. I mean, as cool as a Bolton could be, but he's just like, hey, not cool. Do not cut off this guy's hand, Fargo Hoat.
You haven't won this castle yet. I haven't rode away just yet.
Yeah.
Again, like the sleight of hand with Brienne. Obviously, looking back, I see it as that. But maybe going forward for the first time and not having knowledge of the Red Wedding, this is just, you take kind of his standoffishness toward the matters, and again, the stuff of the Freymen, not as foreshadowing. You just take it as, you know, Roose is kind of a strict guy, and this is just the kind of guy he is. So when Brienne speaks up and she starts speaking of her loyalties and the earshot of Roose, less toward the Frey guys, he's like, you know, get her out of her bonds. Like, we need to, I'm sorry, my lady. She's like tattling on everyone that was in the Brave Companion. She's like, they took my armor, they took my sword. He's like, you're not going to need it. You're under my protection. But he doesn't come right out and say, like, oh, how's Lady Catelyn? What was it like when you guys were hanging out last? What oath did you swear to her? There's nothing along those lines. It was very calculated and cold, and he used as few of words as he had to use to get all of the points across. And I just thought it was a great way to start to build up the situation, because it's not obviously going to happen. And the only way that you can really pick up on all of these clues is if you have future information.
That's why it's always cool to go back and read it again, because you're able to pick up on things that otherwise just they're passing words. Like, just like, even if you're, you know, 5 books in, there are things that won't make sense to you until you've read the whole series and go back and take another gander at it. So what I find cool about this is just, you don't know what to make of Roose Bolton, right? Because he has to do what's in his own best interest first and foremost. And, you know, whether he's pledged to the Starks or not, either way, it's in his best interest for Jaime to be healthy, right? Because you don't want him, first of all, the fact that he's lost a hand is going to cause some problems.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
That's evident.
I think no matter which side he's on, the fact that exactly. he's been named is not a good thing.
Right, because if you're, let's say, Robb Stark or Catelyn Stark, you're not going to be happy that Jaime has suffered this injury, because who knows what Tywin's retaliation could be. He could cut off Sansa's hand. He could cut off Arya's hand, assuming Arya's still there. Mm-hmm. Neither of them know. And then from a Lannister perspective, certainly Tywin is not going to be happy that his son's hand was chopped off. So Roose is kind of between a rock and a hard place here. And, he's going to have to try and figure out how he gets himself out of it in the best way possible.
And sending Jaime with a nearby maester, again, that's not a giveaway that he's going to be on the side of the Lannisters. That's just something that a lord in his position would need to do. It's good housekeeping. So again, sending him to Qyburn, someone that we've met in the show that is very interesting in the book as well, that we've learned in this chapter. It's not out of the ordinary, completely normal.
Yeah, and it's an introduction, really, to Qyburn, and the fact that he's had some pretty odd practices. The fact that he would know how to tend to something like this without having to remove an entire arm, right? There's that whole conversation between Jaime and Qyburn about how, this could fester, but Jaime really doesn't want to let it go.
Yeah, we'll have to take it above the arm. He's like, listen, you bastard, if you take any a piece of flesh more than you need, you're going to take off my other arm, because I'm going to use it to strangle you to death when you're finished.
Mm-hmm. Jaime even won't fall asleep, right? Or take an anesthetic, right? Because he's afraid. He's afraid that if he does and he, kind of crashes for a couple of hours, he's going to wake up and realize that Qyburn removed his arm anyway.
That was sharp. I was kind of impressed. I was like, that is a really great point, because mm-hmm. even if he gave the guy the terms, when you're out, when you've sucked down enough of that milk of the poppy, buddy, I don't know, you can't really fight back with a guy with a needle and thread.
It's funny because this is the same Qyburn that will come up later, and I liked Jamie's description. He's like, he just seems like a fatherly, soft-spoken man with warm brown eyes. And he gets up to some like dire, dire stuff later. And like, I never thought of him as being like this kind-hearted older man. It's funny. It reminds me of like how Roose Bolton is really soft-spoken. You know, he's got unnerving eyes, but he never raises his voice or threatens people necessarily. He just like speaks very softly. And he's just somehow very frightening. I feel like Qyburn's kind of the same. Like, he asks why a maester's riding with the brave companions.
Yeah.
And all Qyburn says is, "The Citadel took my chain." Like, he's that's all he wants to say. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's kind of a big deal. The Citadel takes your chain for some pretty dark stuff. So, yeah. Like, it's cool.
I feel like the Citadel took my chain, I would tempt my fate in Braavos or, somewhere interesting, somewhere a little bit more exotic than, I'll just ride with Vargo Hoat and his friends.
Yeah. Although there's no
shortage
of work.
Are you surprised, though? Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. No shortage of work. You have to think what these nut jobs are up to on a regular basis.
I guess
basis.
You have to know your market. Yeah, he's like, how do you know how to do this? So he's like, I travel with these guys, so I'm pretty good at
a lot of stumps in my life.
Lots of stumps, yeah.
I also like the last few lines of this is like, Qyburn tells Jaime that he's going to leech the cut over his eye to get the bad blood. And Jaime's like, great. And Qyburn's like, Roose Bolton, Lord Bolton loves his leeches. And Jaime's like, yeah, I bet he does.
Yep.
Bet he does. That's funny.
Weirdo. So there were actually two other passages from this chapter I wanted to get your thoughts on. The first one was, you know, during the lead up to what Jamie believes could be Brienne getting raped. And, you know, he gives her advice. You know, he's, mm-hmm. well, I mean, as much as you can give somebody advice in that situation, when he says, let them do it and go away inside. That was what he'd done when the Starks had died before him. Lord Rickard cooking in his armor while his son Brandon strangled himself trying to save him.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it was a little bit of a throwback you know, to the Mad King and what he did to Lord Rickard and to Brandon Stark. And I, again, it's one of those character moments for Jaime where you start to realize that, you know, yeah, Jaime is Jaime, but there's also this, there's this different side to him, and you have to realize how young he was when this took place. But he's basically basically comparing Brienne being raped to him having to be witness to this type of a situation, which I guess in a way is a form of being mentally raped. You know, to have to watch two people, whether he liked them or not, you know, one is burning in his armor and the other is being strangled to death. And, you know, it goes to show that, you know, Jaime may not be as bad of a person as maybe early on in the series he was made out to be.
I feel like his point was being subjected to something that's horrible that mm-hmm. you don't want to be subjected to.
So you withdraw within yourself.
Right. And not to be cliche, but I think this is a really great mechanic of this chapter and something that George has done with Jaime Lannister's character to prove a point to the masses, which is don't judge a book by its cover. There's so much more inside, especially with someone that doesn't quite reveal much of his feelings. Like, I don't think Jaime necessarily has a Facebook wall that he can write super long posts about how he feels about the things that happens in his life. So a lot of it's guesswork, and a lot of the guesswork from someone like him that is in the public eye is magnified than other people, and his reputation precedes him. And there's lots of different strictures that are built around what people think he feels versus what, especially in this case, he actually felt.
No, I think that's a great point, Kate.
I mean, it's all about just the way people deal with varying degrees of trauma. I don't know that I would compare Jaime watching men being killed as horribly as they were killed to Brienne actually experiencing a gang rape. But I think that Jamie's advice comes from the only place it can come. Like, he's probably never been raped by a bunch of horrible criminals. So he's associating with her. He's attempting to empathize with her situation and give her the advice that helped him in a situation that was difficult for him, which mm-hmm. is the best Jaime can do. Like, that is him giving as much of a shit as Jaime Lannister can give. And that is saying quite a bit for his respect for Brienne and his care for her well-being. The fact that he's trying to care for her in the very, very, very limited way that he can. He can't touch her. He can't defend her. He can't defend himself. All he can use is his words to try to give her advice on how to come out of this in what he feels is the least damaging way. And in that sense, it's very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
good point.
Not bad, Jaime.
And then the one other thing that I wanted to bring up was when he says, again, this was internal monologue, I cannot die while Cersei lives. We will die together as we were born together.
I hope that comes true. I think it's really creepy. Like, it's even if like they die together when they're like 80 or whatever, who knows? But
it's a bit of foreshadowing.
It is. It's definitely like it's something that we should pay attention to, because it's the kind of thing George R. R. Martin will say. And like, it's like heavily foreboding. And then 4 books from now, it'll happen.
I'd have to say that that's a pronouncement of love right there.
I know.
He's inside of his own head. He's not saying anything to impress anybody. Like, he's not ashamed that his twin sister is his lover.
Mm-hmm.
He's not ashamed that he's in love with her at all. He's proud of it in his own mind, because he thinks so much of her. And again, just saying that they're going to die together, it's beautiful. Although, yeah. I mean, it's,
I just
it's
know
wrong.
There's been a lot of theories about that, the two of them in particular. So to the point that was raised about, you know, paying attention to those nuggets, for lack of a better term, that that George includes, you know, definitely could be hinting at something in the future.
So those of you playing at home that have your theories, consider your theory muscles tickled or massaged. Just think.
Massaged, yeah.
Think about it. See, if when Micah says it like that, you just got an ear massage. You're welcome, people. This is a free show.
Yep. It's a free fucking show. Kate, this is your favorite chapter of the entire series.
Oh, I've tried to read it. It like it will not allow itself to be read. Every time I try to read
Oberyn?
It, it's
is
like
he here?
God damn.
Tell your father I'm here.
Not yet.
In about 2 weeks.
Don't tell your father I'm here.
Kate spent three times the amount of reading on this chapter than it would take to read it. So I feel like you actually know more about this chapter than we do.
Well, I certainly know more about the surrounding chapters.
The future.
Yeah.
You hold the future.
So this is a chapter. Let me see if I can figure out what this chapter is about.
It is a chapter,
This is a chapter. This is a Tyrion chapter. He's assessing the damage of the Battle of Blackwater now that he's up and about. He's riding around and King's Landing's a big old mess. And he is he's the master of coins, so he's super excited about that. He is reflecting on the fact that even though he's been married to Sansa for some time, they still have not consummated their marriage, and he doesn't go to bed naked or whatever. Like Sansa's just like keeping him very much at arm's length, and it's very frustrating. But he's getting his jollies with Shay, and Shay doesn't seem to be very upset that he's married now. Shay's just kind of like, whatever. You can get her pregnant or whatever, but
yeah,
you gotta.
Like, I heard it.
You gotta come.
Did it remind you of that scene from Harry Potter? It was like Dean told Seamus that Parvati. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm trying to think about what you're talking about.
it's like when they're playing the like Ron's mad at Harry and they're trying to tell him about the dragons, and it's like a whole like. What do they call that when it
telephone
goes
game.
From like yeah basically that's what it was like when Shay was telling Tyrion how she found out about Sansa.
Yeah, it was like, well, Sir Kevin blah blah blah, and then up the stairs we overheard, and then this guy told me, and then I was outside with the gardener, we were picking fig leaves together, and then we both
is that what you call it
when Lady Elena was walking by, so so she's learned about it, and she was like, you'll give her a big belly and come home to me, which obviously, it's different from Shoshay.
Shoshay
was Shoshana. No, Shoshay was. We have. I mean, everyone listening knows. So I don't need to tell you. It was definitely different. Yeah. Kate, I loved your breakdown of this chapter. I feel like this should be something we do all of the time. I feel like one of us should just not read it, and we should just try to guess at what happened.
I think Tyrion's in this chapter, probably Bronn. He probably rubs at the scar
Keep
on
going.
His nose.
Sir Bronn of Blackwater. Yes, he does.
Let's see. He goes to a wine sink where Simon the Silver Tongue. He is going to pay off Simon and tell him, hey, don't sing any songs about, you know, stuff that you shouldn't know about.
That you're aware of.
Yeah, it's just like he's ready to buy him off, and Simon is a total idiot. And so Tyrion tells Bronn, is like, just kill him. Like he's got a really creative way of killing him. But he's like,
this
we're just
like
gonna
drunk
kill
history.
Him.
I'm just imagining someone acting out Tyrion leaning into Bronn's ear drunkenly going, just kill him.
Just kill him.
Simon's in the background just playing his lute.
See, this is a good Patreon tier. We get drunk and recall what happened. And then like we could like pay.
Assuming
pay
we read
an
the right chapters. Yeah.
Shut up.
No, you did a great job.
Thanks.
You really did. I liked the intro when he's kind of going around and assessing everything.
Yeah.
It's really described in such rich detail, which is, I think, what we got in the two chapters last week when we were with Arya and then at the wall. Mm-hmm. And you just all the things that you were witness to during the Battle of Blackwater. And now here you are sort of seeing the results of that because you really haven't been exposed to it. Mm-hmm. And here's Tyrion like literally walking through everything. Yeah. That is the aftermath, and you know he comes across the three whores, right? And you know he makes note, oh, we should do something. I don't want kids like climbing on it and falling and breaking their heads. And then like somebody flings shit at his feet. He's like, oh, fuck them all. I don't care. They can all die.
He goes, I hope they burst like melons on this cobblestone.
So
Tyrion's going through some rough stuff. He's he's noticeably and understandably frustrated with his lot in life. Like, his father gave him the title of Master of Coin specifically probably because he now has to clean up everything that's going on with King's Landing. Like, Tyrion has to pay. Not only did he like save their bacon with the chain trick at Blackwater Bay, but now he's in charge of fixing all of the dumb shit that happened to King's Landing. Like, it's just like he can't win. His father gives him no respect.
Well, I think because of all the great that he did preceding the Battle of Blackwater, I think he should be not surprised that his dad put him up to the task of cleaning up their money situation. Because if Tyrion, who I respect very greatly, doesn't do it, who the hell is? Who's gonna be the other guy that takes that mantle? Are they gonna put Mace Tyrell up to the job? No, let's not do that. Although, Tyrion, you may be a little dismayed at the work that you have to do. Better to be working than not be working, pal.
Yeah.
And so when he does meet with Simon Silvertongue, do you feel like he's making light of Tyrion's situation? Because he calls him the Hand a couple of times and Tyrion corrects him. But I don't know if it's just more that he feels like he's in control of the situation.
I mean, he's got the information about Shay in his back pocket. And as Tyrion recollects, as he is having a bit of internal monologue after the first few exchanges with Simon, he's like, you know, I bet this guy is being kind of edgy to me right now, because the last time we saw each other, we didn't have the best words. If you guys remember when we were reading Clash, we didn't have the best words, and I gave him a threat that I never really went through on, so it's now turned into an idle threat. So this guy kind of has the power position, because Tyrion has even less power now than he did then.
Yeah. Simon is in a lot of trouble.
Simon. Simon is like stupid too. That's what pisses me off, is Simon thinks he's in this great position to blackmail the Lannisters, like they're gonna give him what he wants. You know, it's so stupid. But I don't know. It frustrates me. Simon's like, what? He's so like fake modest the whole time too. He's like, well, you know, if I end up singing at the wedding, gonna be really happy to do that, and if I don't, well, I'm afraid I'm gonna have to sing my new song all over the rest of King's Landing at wine sinks, and everybody's gonna know. Like, Tyrion isn't just gonna, Tyrion isn't just gonna be like, I'm just gonna kill you. I'm just gonna have Bronn kill you. Like,
I could have Pod.
So
kill
stupid.
You got a
Pod
loot, buddy.
Could kill you.
You got a loot. You're carrying around a loot.
I thought there's a line in this chapter where he like snaps at Pod, and Bronn's like, well, don't bite the boy's head off. Tyrion's like, well, he's not using it, so who cares? I thought that was a little rough. I'm like, oh,
it was a little rough.
Pod.
Yeah, don't hate on Pod.
Yeah.
He's just having a moment of weakness. I think this chapter was described earlier after he said the bit about the kids falling off the top of the three whores. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm in a dark mood.
Yeah,
he admits
to himself. He's grumpy.
He's in a dark mood.
Understandably.
He's walking around brooding, you know?
He's had a rough few weeks, man.
He has. He's got to deal with Sansa. And Sansa is dealing with a lot as well. So he's sympathetically, now that they're married, dealing with what she's dealing with. And he's dealing with what he's dealing with. And he never gets any respect from Dad, ever. And he has to do all this. And he just wishes Littlefinger were here so he could clean up the money situation. I mean, there's lots of rebuilding to do. There's lots of things to be fixed. And now Bronn is a sir. So again, that's just probably always the source of discomfort for him. He's just like, Bronn, man.
Bronn doesn't care, though. He's all up for it.
Bronn's swishing around in his damn cloak this whole chapter, just minding his own beeswax. He doesn't give a damn what's happening. And I think that I remember about 3 or 4 paragraphs into this chapter, I was thinking to myself, well done, showrunners, of just understanding the vein of what the true source of what Bronn's character is and really amplifying him for the screen, because that's the guy, man. That's how he is. That's just, he's just this dude, and he's just an interesting
he's
character
a dude
to me.
I want to get into a part of this chapter that has stuck with me, because for all of the overt violence and terrible death, rape, everything else that happens in these books, what Tywin Lannister does in this chapter has always stuck with me as just like cold shit. And that is, because what Tywin has done in this chapter is melt down Ned Stark's sword to forge 2 new swords for himself. And for some reason, that just has always seemed like such a slap in the face to the
it's
start.
Such a violation.
It feels so, so much like a violation. And I've never been able to figure out why. Like, I understand it's probably because, like, they do a lot of emphasis on how much ice means to the Stark family and to Eddard specifically, and how rare Valyrian steel is. And
Definitely.
And, like, mm-hmm. it's so representative of how Tywin feels that he's dealt with the Starks. It's just like another notch. It's just like the reins. Like, the reins are gone. The Starks are just as gone to Tywin. He's like, knocking out another family, no problem.
It was very symbolic, particularly of Ned, right?
Yeah.
And it was sort of the last remaining piece of him. I mean, his children still live on, some of them. Mm-hmm. Ice was just, it was Ned's, right? That was his sword. And it feels like you're killing him all over again by doing what Tywin does in this chapter. And I think, though, that there is some, you feel a little bit better, though, knowing what at least happens with one of the swords, right? With Oathkeeper.
Yeah.
That it's given to Brienne, right, to protect the Stark children.
Right.
So in a way, Ice still lives on,
right,
but now it's almost like it has its evil twin in Heart Eater, which we don't really know. At least I can't recall what happens to it beyond Joffrey's wedding. So it is tough. Like, because I remember when I went to the season premiere and watched this first episode, season four, and it was this scene. Some liberties were obviously taken with Tywin actually being there when it happened, but, you know, just seeing this Valyrian steel reforged and made into two swords. And it's like, as a reader, you knew what was happening. I don't know if people were able to pick up on it right away. I can't really remember how much of the, I don't know if there was any sort of insignia that defined it as being ice when you were watching it.
Being tossed into the fire for me.
Okay. Yeah. So I don't know how many people picked up on it, but it was such a powerful opening as a reader to watch that and just to witness it. And if you caught on to it, obviously, to know what was happening right there, you felt like I said, like Ned was being killed all over again.
Yeah. And to know that this sword is being melted down, at least half of it is going to, like, the shittiest person, in the most anti-Stark person who has caused the death and maiming of so many of this clan. Oh, it just grinds my gears.
My gears are grinded because he named it such a bad name. Heart Eater, like,
I know.
That's
exactly sick. Only cunts name their swords.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I just feel like Oathkeeper, that's a pretty good name for a sword. Ice, damn good name for a sword. All right. Dritz named his swords Twinkle and Icing Death. Those are equally awesome names for swords. The list goes on of all the ancient / enchanted swords that are named, and of names of which I love. But Heart Eater is among the names, among the list of the worst names.
Doesn't he name it something different in the show, like Widow's Scream or something?
Yeah, Heart Eater is the sword from
Widow's Wail.
Widow's Wail.
From the beginning when he was tossed into the river. But, I mean, honestly, so that fact was a little bit off for a second. But people listening
Long
at home.
Longclaw, now that's another name.
That's a great name. People listening home, you can agree with me that Heart Eater was a bad name and it deserved to be tossed into that body of water by Arya.
Heart Eater sounds like a song by, like, the Scorpions or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, 80s hair metal.
I love the Scorpions, and if they made a song called Heart Eater, I'd crank that motherfucker
up. Oh, hell yeah.
But yeah, no. Anyway, so enough of the beration there. I feel kind of bad because we're respecting Nedward Stark. Tyrion was summoned by Pod to see Tywin, and to go see Tywin in the Tower of the Hand, he did. And obviously this was happening. And first off, I just want to say that while I am very saddened about the breaking down of ice, and it does bother me, you gotta understand why Tywin did it, man. Like, the Lannisters haven't had Valyrian still in the family for a while. It was just kind of sitting there. You know what I mean? He was just like, well, we really need these swords. And it kind of raised a red flag in my brain to say, you know, how confident do you have to be that Jaime is coming home, that you make him a sword? Mm-hmm. So you got to kind of question.
Because Tyrion knew that shit wasn't for him.
Right, right, right. Mm-hmm. You got to question where he is. So maybe at this point in the story, you can kind of guess maybe he knows that Jaime is headed toward Roose Bolton, and that maybe there's already a setup. There's already some kind of a deliverance for Jaime being headed toward King's Landing. I don't know. I feel like that it's kind of a pretty strong vote of confidence that his son will return, and creating him a Valyrian steel sword customized for him.
Yeah, that's very true. He doesn't seem to be worried about Jaime at all. It's just like
that's
an inevitability.
Son.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, almost certainly when Vargo Hoke captured them, he sent word to Bolton. Bolton sent a raven to King's Landing. Like, all of this is... And like I said, in the last... There's Tywin's Great Day. Remember that? Like, Tywin is already, he's like six chapters ahead of us, at least. He knows probably where Jaime is when he's having that great day. He's already figured out, like, what's going to happen at the twins.
Yeah.
So at this point, he's just like, he's walking around essentially whatever the closest Tywin
just,
Lannister gets to, like, whistling. Like,
just buying swords, buying Valyrian steel swords.
Yeah.
It's not stated in this chapter where the steel is coming
from,
right?
Not explicitly, but it does go into quite a bit. And I would think that Tyrion would be a little bit brighter than this. Like, the only Valyrian sword they've gotten anywhere close to is Ned Stark's greatsword. So, like, what, he put the pieces together, fella. Tywin has tried to buy Valyrian steel several times from the great houses, but he's always been rebuffed, and it's really rare to find it. And the only other time we've heard anything about Valyrian steel in this whole series is ice. And that used to be Ned's and then was passed on to the headsman. And so clearly, to me, it seems deathly obvious that this is where the Valyrian steel has come from. Tywin got it for free, actually. He didn't have to pay anything for it.
Just the restocking fee, you know, just get just get it remade.
And this is such a contrast, too, between Tyrion walking the streets of King's Landing, trying to figure out where he's going to get the money to pay for the reconstructive effort.
True.
And then he walks in and Tywin's like custom ordering some super expensive swords to give to his grandson and his other son. And he's like, yeah, you find your money for your little construction projects. Like, you're the master of coin. This is your job. But he's like off spending mad bucks on whatever it costs to forge Valyrian steel swords with like custom red dye in them and shit. Like, there's not a lot of armor smiths, weapon smiths that can work with that stuff, certainly.
I mean, it definitely takes some skill, and you know, he's got expensive taste, I'm telling you.
He does.
Got champagne
and he's spaying.
Champagne wishes.
Spaying.
Exotic
spaying. Do you hear what I just said? I just said, I meant to say spending, and I said he's spaying, so apparently he's rounding up all the cats.
That's why he needs the sword.
Dogs.
Fresh blade for all the spaying that he must do. That's what he does instead of whistling. He's like, a great day! I'm gonna make sure that no overpopulation of the cats happens in King's Landing. I love animals.
But yeah, he says 77 bloody courses, 1,000 guests, a pie full of doves, singers, jugglers, and Tywin says, extravagance has its uses. You know, talking about demonstrating the power and wealth of Casterly Rock for all the realm to see. But Tyrion makes a great comment. That is my own of the chapter. Just, I know we're still going through it, but it's amazing. If you do shit gold, father, find a privy and get busy.
That's damn good.
Oh, so good.
You couldn't even wait for Owens for that. I don't fault you.
It's just fair. It applied since you were talking about his extravagance.
Better get busy, find a privy, man. Right. Find a privy, get busy. Yeah. I need that on a t-shirt.
Because we all know he finds a privy later on in this book.
That's right. Yeah, well. We also find out that the Tyrells have refused the offer to marry Cersei to Willis. And that Tywin is...
No Willis for you.
Yep, no. Yeah. Tywin's very concerned that...
And Tyrion just wants to bring it up bad.
He's going to hold that. It'd just be like, I have this nugget. Like, they didn't want her. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't know why. Presumably because he, like, sniped Sansa out from under them. And so now they're just not interested in any further ties.
Willis is pissed. He's like, God damn it.
Yeah. Cersei's a little older, but by all accounts, she's stunningly beautiful. She's also evil as hell, but who knows how much of that Willis knows. And also, she's not super keen on being a broodmare again.
That's true.
But then, just after this, Pycelle comes in with a bit of news a bit of Ravenly news. He comes in and says that the Lord Commander Mormont is presumed dead.
Owen Marsh sends his regards to the Lannisters. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like, hey, a lot of stuff happened, and we need your help.
A lot of stuff. Too much to go into, but.
Basically, he's like, there are White Walkers. They're real. No, he. Unfortunately, he didn't.
He didn't go into detail about that. No.
Yeah.
Probably because it would have come off as super insane, right? And they don't know.
He doesn't know exactly.
Yeah, they don't know what happened. They just like, they know they came under attack, but so far maybe nobody's made it back from like Sam. We know Sam's still alive, hauling his ass through the woods somewhere, but you know, we don't know whether he's reached the castle or not. So they get the information that they've got, and then Pycelle and Tywin start this complicated ritual of like winking at each other that just like Janos Slint would make a good Lord Commander, and Pycelle's like, I know what you mean. And Tywin's like, yeah, we should tell him that Janos, and Tyrion's like, no, Janos Slint is the worst. We can't, that's a terrible idea. He's gross. And but Tywin and Pycelle are too busy winking at each other and then writing letters. So that's how the chapter ends.
It also ends with Tyrion making a very important point, because he thinks back to the fact that, hey, you know, I had a chance to kill Janos Slint. I had a chance to kill Grandmaster Pycelle, and I didn't do it. But this guy, Simon Silvertongue, yeah, you know what? I'm going to kill him.
Even though, like, he's the least of Tyrion's worries or problems at this point. I do feel like it's the one thing that he has control over is whether he can kill this dumb singer.
He's like, I've learned my lesson. I just need to start killing the people.
That's his whole lesson. Is like, I never kill people. I really need to kill people. Like,
but it's a change in character for Tyrion. It's a massive change in character. And it says something that he's willing to kill somebody who is interfering in his love affair with a whore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's important to realize how much he really does care about Shay, because as we've noted, the book show difference is that in the book, she really doesn't give a shit about him.
Yeah.
And
it's clear.
You know, it's very, very evident as we move further in this book. And just to note the lengths that he's going through for her, and it's evidence in this chapter, you know, that he's willing to go all the way out of his way, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's killing somebody, like a singer, a court singer. Like, this guy is not anybody important.
At the end of the day, why not just let the guy sing? You're married now. You know,
like, right. Who cares if you have a little something, something on the side? These are the times they live in, right? I mean, I'm not condoning it.
Yeah, Mike, you're going to get angry letters now. Just tons.
Yeah. Well,
look at Robert. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah. Massive whoring around. But also, I think Tyrion, this is the one thing, if you think about it, this is the one thing that Tyrion has that's really just his. Everything else about his life is dictated by other people. He's given a job. He's given a wife. He's given drama. Like, everything that he has to deal with is just heaped onto his plate. But Shay, he picked. Shay was a decision that he made. And for a while, nobody else was really involved in it. Tywin now says he's going to hang her or whatever. But I don't know. Has Tywin made that threat in the book yet? I think he has. Maybe not.
Well, I think we know that there's a serious issue for Tyrion should she be found to be in King's Landing, because Tywin gave him specific orders, you know, to stop his
No more whoring.
Whoring, yeah.
But so Shay is the one thing that Tyrion has that really feels like his. As pathetic as it is, he even realizes that in this chapter. Like, Shay's really not that upset that he's married, and he's like, I kind of always hoping she'd be upset, but I guess this is the closest I'm ever going to get to love. And it's so sad. It's so sad. But it's what he has. And so the fact that he has some small modicum of control over the situation by attempting to silence this singer or kill him or whatever, it's just like that's the one thing he can control, or at least attempt to, that like nobody else has control over. It's his problem. And I can see where like he would become really focused on it, because this is the second Tyrion chapter where we've heard about his plans for Simon. Like, they matter. like any of it matters, but it's what he's focused on because it's like the one little piece of happiness, shred of happiness that he has in his life.
Yeah.
I love this. So much important stuff happening in this chapter as far as lives and decisions and matters of state. And there's so much, especially considering the stuff with the wall. But since we're inside of Tyrion's mind, this is projected as important to us. And really, this is so insignificant. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's oh man, that's interesting. I like it.
Let's talk about Owns.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that alone owns me. I don't want to skip there.
Yeah.
I just think that's cool. That's very well done. You're very like, interesting damn. Literature.
Hey guys, my own for the Jaime chapter goes to Bruce Bolton for having in his employ good old Meister Qyburn, who is competent enough to deal with all of these severed limbs that Vargo Hoat keeps creating. So mad props to Roose.
Well, I already gave my own for Tyrion. Yeah. So.
I think my own for Tyrion goes to this awesome weaponsmith who, like, this is, he's saying, Tyrion asks this guy, like, how did you make this blade red? That's insane. And the guy's like, okay, I had to do a bunch of stuff and none of it worked. And I know it doesn't look right, but that, like, he worked 50 spells and brightened the red time and time again, but always the color would darken as if the blade was drinking the sun from it. And like, I feel like this guy's like, he's doing crazy, crazy cool shit with this sword and he's still not there, but like, he's just like, oh, if it please you, I'll try again. And Tyrion's like, no, it looks good. But this guy must be such a master at his craft to make these gorgeous swords, even though, you know, he melted down ice from it. But I give him an own for his craftsmanship.
I also give my own to him. I give him an own because he chose my favorite gemstone, which is the garnet. And Tywin snubbed it out quickly. He's like, no, we need to put the rubies instead. But I think he should have went with the garnet because rubies, they just don't, to me, they don't carry the same weight. They don't carry the same globular thickness, same
garnets deep lack tones the fire.
They do not lack the fire. You see, that's where Tywin is wrong. So I'm going to go with you, master swordsmith, talented friend of all of those with good taste. I love you. I might have been a little strong, but I love you.
Brienne owns. I guess my own goes to Brienne. Yes. Is it the Brienne chapter, everyone?
Not yet, Kate. Spoiler.
What are you guys talking about?
Oh, no.
Kate, you were going to give your own to Brienne, it sounded like.
I just love her so much. But actually, I think my own for the Brienne chapter goes to Jaime because he saved her life, or at least he saved her maidenhood, potentially her life, depending on how that situation could have turned. It sounded like she was not going to go easily, so it's highly likely that they would have done some pretty terrible things that may have edited her death. So I give my own to Jaime for speaking up and saving that girl. I'm really excited that he did that. Good job, Jaime.
He spoke up and he was a man, man.
He's a man, man.
Mm-hmm. Good job, man, man. Great band, man. Great band.
Ownage.
What you got?
I have to give it to Roose Bolton because there was that one quote where it said, like, basically that his silence was more powerful than anything that Vargo Hoat was saying.
Yeah. Scary.
I don't know. People like that, they're freaky. And just for everything that we've already mentioned, the fact that, you know, there's definitely some shady stuff that's going on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And obviously we're not privy to it yet, but just the cold, calculating silence of Roose Bolton.
Mm-hmm. Good own.
Not bad.
A few leeches.
Good decision, yeah. I feel like Jaime deserves my own, but it's kind of a hybrid. I mean, there's lots of really atypical, own-worthy things that happen in this chapter. Again, I feel like it should be honorably mentioned, or honorably mentioned at least, that Zolo the fat Dothraki is fat when we know Dothraki's to be ripped and beautiful. And he has, I don't know, he's picked his teeth with too many horses. So I'm not going to give my own to him, but he definitely has grown larger than most Dothraki I've ever met or have grown to know. But I think that this own will have to go to Qyburn and Jamie for their situation talking about Roos.
Mm-hmm.
Qyburn says, a leech, lovely. Or no, Qyburn says, I'll grind some herbs and you can mix with wine to bring down your fever. Come back on the morrow and I'll put a leech on your eye to drain the bad blood. Like, all right, they've already done the arm situation. He did a great job. Down to business. Jamie's like, oh, a leech, lovely. And he goes, Lord Bolton is very fond of leeches, Qyburn said primly. Jamie's just like, yes, he would be. Mm-hmm. Just like snark.
Yeah.
After snark. After getting your arm chopped into.
Having now accidentally recorded both this Jamie chapter and the next Jamie chapter, I can safely say, like, even in the worst, direst of situations, Jamie is like 87% snark. He's a snarky fool.
Yeah. I know, it's fun. It's
snarky snarks.
It's interesting.
Sounds like a Pokemon.
Okay, as for Tyrion's chapter, look, guys, Cersei is going crazy. She wants, like, 77 courses and all sorts of crap at the wedding, including 7 singers. Now, I don't know what Cersei's screening process is, but my own has to go to these 7 singers who are mentioned by name in the book. They are Galleon of Coy, Bethany Fairfingers, Aemon Castaigne, Alaric of Aeson, Hamish the Harper, Colley O'Quaynus, and Orland of Old Town. They are all the top of their game singers worthy of the king's own wedding. So bless them, own to them for the Tyrion chapter.
As always, we got a ton of owns sent in to us in a number of different ways, and we'll check in on all of them. But one that we actually haven't done in a little bit has been email. So if you want to send us a book of your owns for the chapters that we read and can't fit into 140 characters or less, you can shoot us an email, contact@gameofowns.com. And one person who frequently does that is our good friend Nicholas Hartley.
Nick Hartley,
Who does not so.
No, he does not. So the own for his Jamie chapter goes to Roose Bolton. Mm. While he has a few redeeming qualities, he does get the big picture. I think for Robb's other bannermen, such as the Karstarks and Umbers, this war was going to be just like Robert's Rebellion. Like his father before him, Robb would call the banners and they would ride south and defeat the enemy on the battlefield and be victorious. That might have been so if Tywin was King Aerys, but he's not. Roos has much more in common with southern counterparts than his northern brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting point.
Interesting.
And for Tyrion, the own goes to Olenna Tyrell. There are but a few people in all the 7 kingdoms that can say they outplayed Tywin Lannister even just once, but she's one of them. While she loves and values her granddaughter, she knows the value of her brother, and thus Highgarden itself is more valuable still. She lost the match of Willis to Sansa, but she will not let Mace be so foolish as to hand the Reach over to Lyons.
Mm.
Nick Hartley does not so.
Sorry,
Nick Hartley does not so. Thank you, Nick Hartley. Excellent owns. I always like an Olenna Tyrell own when she's like, she's in the chapter, like not even named. But they're like, you know, Mace's mom told him that he can't marry his son to Cersei. Like, I was like, yes, go Mace's mom.
Oh, I don't disagree.
We have an email from Nicole. She gives her own for Jamie's chapter. My own goes to Roos Bolton. He is so cold and calculating, even his silence is threatening. For Tyrion's chapter, the pot shop in Fleabottom, quote, all kinds of meat in it, I hear. Ew. Yeah.
Bronn's trying to sell him on the bowl of brown.
In reference to a couple podcasts ago, yes, there are women listeners to this podcast. I've listened to the show from the beginning. I'm excited you've gotten more Bannermen pledging because I have long wanted more book reader discussions, theories, etc. Side note, I miss Selena, but Kate is a delight and her laugh is catchable. Mm.
Thanks to Nick and Nicole for the emails.
You guys know
now
each other?
Nick and Nicole.
They're the same
Maybe they're
person.
Dating each other.
Maybe.
Move on.
Listen, if you guys aren't dating each other and you guys are single, get to know each other. All right? You both love the podcast and obviously you both love Game of Thrones. And I think that you both, yes, gave your own to Roose Bolton for Jamie. So I'm just saying.
What are the chances?
What are the chances? Think about it. Maybe you guys can sew.
We have some. Oh my God. We have some Facebook owns, don't we, Zachary?
We do. We have some owns on Facebook. Here's the first one from Facebook, from Judd Blevins. He says, I'll never get to say it again. Own goes to horse piss. Yes.
Yes.
Pretty good.
That is a very good own.
If you'd like, you could write that into next week's episode. You can say it again. Mm-hmm. We're fine with that.
Yeah, sure.
Kim Gabrielson says, first own goes to Brienne for propelling purpose back into Jamie's life. Quote, craven, Jamie thought. Can it be?
Very nice.
Own two goes to Simon Silvertongue for teaching Tyrion a lesson he will later have use of. Quote, I threatened him, but nothing ever came of the threat. So now he believes me toothless.
That's a good lesson.
I believe those sharp bones are from a member of our small council.
Jared Cazal says, Jamie gets the own with an assist from Brienne for quickly regaining his sense of humor post-maiming. Whether it was Vargo's lisp or Roose's proclivity for leeches, no target was spared the Kingslayer's caustic wit in this chapter. And his decision to go without anesthetic during what passes for medieval surgery is own-worthy in and of itself.
Indeed.
Owned to Tyrion for his efficient, if brutal, solution to a misguided blackmail attempt. Simon has stones to threaten a member of the royal family, but turning down money, safety, and a chance to see the world so that he can compete in the Westerosi version of American Idol, he deserves to wind up in someone's bowl.
God. Jared Cazal.
Oh, Jared Cazal.
He's so brutally.
So good. Such
brutally
good.
Brutally honest. Yeah. You know, what a. He should have just taken the money and went to Essos on, like,
I know.
Hopped on a pleasure barge. Anyway. Ugh. Jennifer Bandle says, for Jamie's chapter, I have a tie. Brienne calling Jamie craven when he wants to die. Jamie's shock is priceless. Roose Bolton, though I hate him, I love him ripping Jamie's amputated hand off Jamie's neck and throwing it at Hoat. Also, I think, this is a side note for me, I think we should call him Hoat because that's a pretty cool name. Hoat. The sight of it offends me. For Tyrion, the description of ice reforged, even though it hurts inside, is so beautiful. I agree.
It was pretty.
All right. We also heard from our good friend, Jeff Lightfoot. Oh,
Professor Jeff.
He writes in and says, with the end of the semester and everyone in my family, he scrawled up on our wall /write in. But the end of the semester and everyone in my family coming down with grayscale, aka the flu. Haven't had the chance to read in a while, but I have been listening and love the idea one of you had a few episodes ago of who from the Game of Thrones world you would like to have over for Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner. My early frontrunners are Tormund Giantsbane, his nice giant buddy from the North of the Wall, Lady Olenna, Missandei, and Cersei. While it might be a little unseemly for Lady Olenna, I can only imagine how awesome of a conversation her, Tormund the Giant, might have.
That's true.
I think Olenna would love Missandei, who can translate anything as needed and enjoy a good holiday meal. And lastly, Cersei's utter disgust with it all would give me all I need to be thankful for. Looking forward to Christmas break and some catching up on my reading. So thank you, Jeff. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Christina Klein posted on Facebook. She says, I was dreaming when I wrote this. Forgive me if it goes astray. In the Jamie chapter, Brienne owns JB when she asks, are you so craven? Which shocks him out of his self-pity party and encourages him to survive while slowly but surely deepening the respect between them. He saves her from rape 2 pages later. In the Tyrion chapter, Tywin owns Valyrian steel, quote, at long last. He also owns Tyrion several times. Quote, it is meant for my son. You seem to have no difficulty betting whores. Is the Stark girl made differently? If you cannot pay for them, say so, and I shall find a master of coin who can. End quote. Father of the year.
Yeah.
Oh, I think Tywin even throws out Moon Boy as an option too.
Yeah, he does. He's being such a jerk.
Christina like went through and picked out some of his zingers. That's good. That's
she did. List. Yeah. I like it.
All right. Well, over on Twitter, Ram Dent says, Mott owned that Valyrian still. Hashtag skills. I agree, buddy.
Yeah.
He also says, owned to Jamie's character development. Now I know how Tyrion has felt all those times they laughed at him.
Yeah.
You think like us, man. Yeah.
At Wingnut89 says, same procedure as every time. Tyrion gets my own because he is fucking badass Tyrion.
Fair enough.
Okay. I like that.
Sebastian didn't read either, clearly.
No, that's good. It's good.
He was the one that threw out the weather a couple episodes ago.
Oh, yeah.
Ago
too, good.
Was he?
I don't know.
He was.
It might have been Simon Amundsen. The Lady Ash on Twitter says, own to Vargo Hoat for developing a name for himself by chopping off hands. Some strive for greatness, some just chop.
That's true.
And own to Tyrion, he rid himself of Simon, who was fool enough to reveal what he knew to Tyrion. Never show your cards. Everybody's learning lessons.
That's something to think about. I feel like our listeners are learning with us too. All right. Simon Amundsen says, Tyrion owns for bringing in more good culinary experiences to King's Landing. Marinated silver tongue. Delicious.
Oh, gross.
Delicious. He also says, own to Jamie for being able to chug his whole drink of piss before vomiting.
That's true.
Hashtag Game of Thrones drinking game. Wow. Let's play at home, kids. Send us videos of you not doing that. Oh, man.
All right. Speaking of drinking and debauchery and all things related, we got a cool tweet here from our good friend Peter Baelish, who says, owns go to myself for, you know, always scheming.
With and a very large smiley face.
Yeah, that's a large wink, my friend. Wow. Thank you, Peter Baelish.
Bevan Boychuk on Twitter says, here is a pie for Theon Greyjoy. And it is a picture of a Cthulhu pie, I think, but it's like squid-like, you know? And the caption says, is that a new pie? No, it's an old one. That's a little Lovecraft
humor. I think that was
humor.
Specifically for Eric.
Yeah, that was at Eric. But Eric's not here, is he? Nope. Yeah.
So we'll eat it ourselves.
I'll eat that whole pie.
Eric, the fishwife, is gone for this evening.
Hopefully back
but
next
he
week.
Will appreciate Greyjoy humor.
For our Christmas celebrations, our holiday situations.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm happy that it's December, and it's kind of crazy that Christmas is so close by, and Micah has already begun celebrating Hanukkah.
Hanukkah.
I have.
He already had his ceremonial latke and made me ceremonially jealous.
Do you drink Heineken?
Do you, Micah?
I don't think Heineken goes with it. But,
not with Hanukkah. Nope.
Not with Hanukkah.
Nope.
That's a different holiday.
Yeah, definitely not with Hanukkah.
But happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa.
Same to all of
everybody
you.
Everybody out there. Yeah.
Christmas Hanukkah Kwanzaa.
Visit. Enjoy your solstice. And
yes. Coming up soon. Yeah. Right? 21st.
Yeah, in Australia, I hope you're enjoying your summer weather.
Yeah. Enjoy that. Enjoy that weather.
All of the ways that you heard us read from just before, you can contact us in pretty much any way imaginable over the internet, email, Twitter, Facebook. It's all pretty straightforward.
Any way imaginable.
Except for the email. The email is contact@gameofowns.com, but everything else is just @gameofowns, /gameofowns. We were pretty inventive when we came up with that stuff. So leave some of your comments on Watchers on the Wall. We do read those every once in a while. Kate, we actually said last week you weren't able to be on the show because you were responding to the thread from the previous episode.
I'll need to be just making comments on this thread. No, it was a good discussion. We had a really nice discussion.
I saw that.
It's a fun time for us in the show right now. We get to be, I feel like just extending, we're always grateful and thankful for our lives in general, but extending from Thanksgiving until now, or until the season of the holiday approaching, it's just a really great occasion to kind of always think about those things. So thanks everybody for being here.
Next week we'll be reading Samwell and Arya.
Are you sure, Kate?
Yes. In 3 weeks we'll be reading the chapters that I read this week. Oh yeah, I meant to give an honorary own for the Tyrion chapter to Oberyn. It's gonna be really funny, but I forgot to. Honorary own to Oberyn Martell for the Tyrion chapter that I read that was not the Tyrion chapter that I was supposed to read.
So make sure you warm your cocoa near the fire. That's what it's supposed to be. And love everyone.
Yes.
Agreed. Yes.
Everyone.
Poetry. Still rhyming.
And read the right chapters for next week.
God damn it.
Good night, everyone.
Might have just been foreign. Anyway, let's continue. Facebook.
All right.
Kate's throwing down.